Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Helles Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week we'll be talking with Alex Jennings, whose new epic fantasy is The Ballad of Perilous Graves. We'll also hear from artist Kyle Bravo, whose latest entry cartooning his family life is Forever and Everything 8. It is such a pleasure to welcome Alex Jennings to The Reading Life and celebrate his long-awaited novel, The Ballad of Perilous Graves. If anyone was ever positioned to appreciate the cosmopolitan nature and culture of New Orleans, it is Alex. He was born in Wiesbaden, Germany, grew up in Haberone, and has lived all over the world. He moved to New Orleans in 2006 and has been working on this epic fantasy novel ever since. He's taught at the New Orleans Center for the Creative Arts and curated the Dogfish Reading Series. Alex Jennings, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Hi.
Hi. I've been waiting for this for so long. I love this book so much. So how'd you get to New Orleans? Tell us your New Orleans story.
Well, in 2003, my brother and I took a road trip in August, sort of aimless. And we wound up coming to New Orleans on a whim, and I fell in love with the place immediately. And so it wasn't long before we decided to move down, and I've been living here ever since.
That's a great story. The old, I came to New Orleans and never left story, which is great. Now, this book has grown out of many, many things. Post-Katrina conversations, to be sure, but also a challenge from your father for this type of book, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I consider fantasy fiction to be a gift that my father gave to me. When my younger brother and I were little, he used to read to us from Lord of the Rings. And, you know, those books will always have a very special place in my heart. But there's a lot of, you know, black is evil imagery. And I remember one night my dad put the book down and he said, I wish that there was a fantasy where everyone is black and the darkest, blackest one is the hero. And that stuck with me all my life. Yeah. And eventually I began writing black fantasy, and I consider this book a way of giving back to my dad for that inspiration.
Absolutely. What a reader he must have been.
Oh, he's lovely.
So tell us the setup for this long and complicated story. First of all, I love the title because I love that classic idea of the ballad, you know, the folkloric tale of living on in music and fiction, and, you know, it's just the ballad of. Calls all kinds of things to mind. So talk about developing the ballad and developing New Orleans as you see it in this book, because it's a big book.
While I was still trying to arrange to move down here in 2005, Katrina hit the city and there was the failure of the federal levees. And I was not sure that I would be able to move here. Not just because I wasn't sure the city would be as livable as it was before, but because I didn't want to interfere with the recovery process or take jobs from people that needed them. But in the end, my brother and I moved down anyway, and I began to hear stories during the recovery about children who were forced to return to the city without their parents and fend for themselves, get themselves to school. So the first thing that I thought of immediately was the Pippi Longstocking books by Astrid Lindgren and how Pippi lived by herself and took care of herself. And so that made me wonder what it would be like for a child of New Orleans who was basically Pippi Longstocking and had the same sorts of abilities and adventures.
Yes.
And the story, like, the next element that I needed was a better understanding of the history, the culture, and the music. And so when I was attending the University of New Orleans, I had a history of New Orleans music class from Connie Atkinson.
Uh-huh.
And that illuminated a lot for me and helped me contextualize the jazz, the rock and roll, and relate it in a very real way to the life that I saw going on around me. And that's when the book really began to take shape. And originally, I thought of it as a musical, and I included a lot of popular songs because I didn't know that you just couldn't do that. So towards the end of putting the book together, I had to go through and like write all my own songs. I wondered
about that.
The only real ones I used was St. James Infirmary, and I was going to use Do You Know What It Means to Miss New Orleans, but we couldn't strike a deal that worked for us, and so I came up with a version of my own.
But you also used Walk on Gilded Splinters.
That's true. But there's not a lot of lyrics in there.
Yeah.
But that song is very important to me itself. Like the situation I describe where Casey hears it when he's younger and is kind of haunted by it, that definitely happened to me. And that song, it's never far from my thoughts.
Now, tell us who Casey is.
Casey is Casey Revelle. He is one of the protagonists of the novel. He is a transmasculine street artist who was attending the University of New Orleans when Katrina struck and had to evacuate from the city along with his cousin and did not return until 2018, at which time his art begins
Yes.
behaving strangely.
Takes on a life of its own, as art will do.
Yeah.
You know, but why does that song mean so much to him and to you, if you'll tell us?
There are a few songs like that for me. Like, since I'm a transplant to New Orleans, mm-hmm. I'm not from here. Songs like Iko Iko, for one, yeah. and I Walk on Gilded Splinters came to me before I knew anything about New Orleans or what, or even possibly where it was. And I just kind of made up my own associations for them because they don't necessarily make a lot of literal sense.
Right.
And discovering the actual cultural tradition and music that they come from and learning more about it is actually one of the things that made me so obsessively and meticulously interested in music and its history as well as the city. So Casey has a lot of qualities that I share, and one of those is that connection to music and mm-hmm. wanting to know more about it and experience it as fully as possible.
And I love the street art thing, which is so big right now and important, and it makes us think about it in so many new and different ways.
It is. I think the street art idea really took hold once Freya started operating around the city.
Mm-hmm.
Her tags were very visible and hard to forget, like that figure with the swept over bob and, you know, different expressions, like often that enigmatic smile. And I really fell in love with her work. And I think that was where I first got the idea of tags or street mm-hmm. art figures that weren't on anything, that were freestanding and could operate as they saw fit.
Well, one of the interesting things about this book is that you have these things, you have this great attention to street art, something like street art, and then you have this big other culture, this big sense of the hidden city that's timeless. So you have this really wonderful, you know, meshing of this, all the different New Orleans that ever were.
Thank you. That's what I was going for. Because as I learned more about the city and started integrating myself into the life and culture of the city, it wasn't just the present of the city that I fell in love with. Mm-hmm. Like I loved its history. I loved all of its figures, like Lafcadio Hearn, for instance. And I really wanted to bring that understanding to the book.
Well, it's so interesting because you drive around every day and you see something visually shocking. You know what I mean?
True.
It's something that looks like it is out of the past. It could be the past. It is the past. So it's very appealing for writers, I think, in that way.
I think so. And there's also what seems to me to be an unusual element of storytelling in the way that the people of New Orleans discuss how the city has changed over time. And, you know, ain't there no more is a common phrase. And I think one of the things that really brought that home for me was reading the works of Lafcadio Hearn and seeing how close his descriptions of the city are to the way the city is in the present day. Mm-hmm. And so that's what made me want to give it that sense of timelessness.
So there's a little scene I'd like for you to read of the kids with Grandpa fixing dinner. And it sort of gives a sense of normal life in this book and the kinds of conversations people have. And it's very warm and it gives a real sense of how you write, I think.
Okay, sure thing. Perry's mouth watered. Daddy Deke's fish head stew was legendary, no matter what form it took. He could make it French style, Cajun, or even Thai. On those nights when Daddy Deke made a pot for the family and carried it around the corner, the family would eat in near silence, punctuated with satisfied grunts and hums of approval. "Why I can't never fix the fishes?" Brindy asked. "I want to help make dinner." "You didn't want to learn," Perry said. "You said it was gross." A flash of anger lit Brindy's face, but it blinked away as quickly as it had come. "You promised to be careful with the knife," Daddy Deke said, "and we put you on salad duty, heard?" Mm-hmm. "Yes," Brindy hissed. "Knife, knife, 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 knife." "Lord," Perry said with a roll of his eyes. In the kitchen, Daddy Deke turned on the countertop radio and stride piano poured forth to fill the room like water. "You know who that is?" Daddy Deke said. Perry listened closely. He recognized the song, Summertime, but not the expert hands that played it. Hearing it made him feel a sharp pang of loss. He hadn't touched a keyboard in more than a year. He pushed that thought away. Thinking about playing was a dark road that led nowhere good. "No," Perry said. "Who is it?" "That's Willie the Lion Smith," Daddy Deke said, "out of New Jersey. Used to work in a slaughterhouse with his daddy when he was a boy. He said it was horrible hearing them animals done in, but there was something musical about it, too. That's the thing about music, about a symphony. Destruction, war, peace, and beauty all mixed up, you heard?" Perry frowned and shut his eyes, listening more closely. He could hear it. At first, the tone of the music reminded him of water, and it was still liquid, but now he imagined a bit of darkness and blood mixed in. He saw flowers unfurling to catch rain in a storm. Some of them were destroyed, pulverized by the water, or swept away in the high wind. "That's the thing about music," Daddy Deke said. "It can destroy as much as it creates. It's wild and powerful, Dig." Perry opened his eyes. "Yes," he said, trying to keep the sadness from his voice. "I understand. A little bit, I think."
Oh, that Perry. So deep. We've been talking with Alex Jennings, whose big-hearted new novel is The Ballad of Perilous Graves. It is the perfect novel for your summer reading. Don't miss it. Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bravo, that's the pseudonym for Kyle Sermon, is a cartoonist who's been creating autobiocomics for the past 8 years or more. What are autobiocomics, you might ask? Drawings and collections that make the most of his life as a husband, father, and art teacher at the newly renamed Willow School. He and his wife, the artist Jenny LeBlanc, are the founders of the Hot Iron Press, a letterpress and silkscreen workshop. Today, we're talking about Forever and Everything #8, the #dadlife issue. Kyle Bravo, welcome.
Thank you.
8 years.
I know, yeah. It's been, I guess it's the time just keeps going forward, right?
So talk about the origin of this project and sticking to it all this time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm an artist and I've been making art for a long time. But comics specifically, I didn't really start doing seriously until about 8 years ago. And basically the impetus was when my wife became pregnant with our first kid. A lot of things were changing. A lot of firsts were happening in our lives. And I just thought it would be cool to start documenting that in some way. Around the same time, I discovered a book collection of comics by a cartoonist that I really admire. His name's John Porcellino. His comic is called King Cat. And he also does autobiographical comics. And so I kind of saw that, was really inspired by it. And I thought, I can do this. Uh-huh. This is perfect. And so I started just drawing daily. At first, I was drawing every day a page and just kind of documenting that experience of becoming a parent.
A page a day. My gosh.
I know. And I look back now and I'm like, oh, my gosh, these drawings are terrible. But I've gotten a lot better over the years.
But there was no shortage of action. I mean, you had a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It was a big time of change and transition in my life.
So how does everybody in your household feel about being, you know, captured in these pages?
Well, yeah, my wife is in there sometimes, and I have two kids who are in there sometimes. I mean, the kids, I think they think everyone's dad draws comics. It's just
How
like
nice.
Normal. They can't really read them yet, and so they're fine. And I guess I'm pretty lucky. My wife has a good sense of humor about it. I don't think she's ever really complained about them. Occasionally she'll be like, that's not how it happened. And I say, well, from my perspective, or I had to change it just a little bit to make it a little funnier or something like
and
that.
And a lot of the time she's right. You know, like the haircut comic, you need a haircut, you need a haircut, you need a haircut, time
right.
passes.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That must have been very satisfying for her.
Yeah, to show it from her point of view, I guess.
Yes, yeah. I think so. So you do a page a day. Well, you started off doing a page a day. And then how do you get it down to these book forms? Is it hard to edit your own life?
I mean, I guess you could call it hard, but it's more just that it's like a regular practice that I have to kind of stay on top of. So I actually have like a reminder in my phone that at the end of the day says any comic ideas. And so I kind of just take a little time to just sort of think back through the day and did something interesting happen or like that might have been funny or emotional in some way. So I just keep notes so that when I get time to get around to it, I kind of look through the ideas. Then comes the writing process, kind of writing out the dialogue, planning out the panels, and then get to the drawing.
And the ones we see, the drawings we see, now, are those the original ones you did at the time, or do you redraw them, or do you embellish them, or edit the drawing itself in any way?
Well, originally, I was just drawing in ballpoint pen on photocopy paper, and so those were just scans from that that were so pretty much directly the drawing. About 2 years ago, I switched to drawing digitally. So I'm drawing, you know, on the screen. And so what you see, especially like in the latest issue, it's full color and it's pretty much straight from the what I'm drawing on the screen to being printed out from there.
They're very beautiful.
Thank you.
You pay a lot of attention to the colors. You pay a lot of attention to, there's one that's bound by with string, you know, with thread in this collection.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, back in the day in college, I took a bookbinding and book arts classes. And I've always been interested in the book as kind of like an art object, artist books and zines. And it's just a beautiful form. So yeah, especially with that one where I hand bound it, I just really wanted it to be a really special kind of object and kind of stand out in some way from other books or other zines.
Well, if it's work of the hand, it's work of the heart too, really, when you get right down to it. So the dad in this outing seems a little overwhelmed, to say the least. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I mean, I hope it's somewhat of a universal, relatable experience. I would think most parents at least sometimes feel overwhelmed. So, yeah, I mean, on the cover of this latest issue, I'm climbing a mountain of laundry. That's very indicative of this sort of how do you visually show this feeling of kind of the overwhelming nature of all the things that have to be done in life with work and kids and all the things.
And who doesn't have one of those waiting for them at home at some point?
Right.
You know what I mean? We all feel right. that same way.
Yeah.
And there are some nods to the pandemic here, too, that are very sad but funny, too, in that way you have.
And that was a tricky thing for me to figure out with this issue, because basically, do I have the people wear masks or do I not? Do I acknowledge the pandemic or do I not? So a lot of the issue doesn't necessarily directly show it. But then towards the end, there's a few with masks. There was one particular moment where there's a page where it shows me wearing a mask and then I start crying and the mask sort of fills with the tears. That actually didn't literally happen in that way, that I did not do that specific thing, but I saw someone else. I went to a funeral and I saw someone who was bereaved there crying and their mask filled with the tears. And it was just like such a beautiful image. I really wanted to capture that in some way.
And we've all felt that way at some point in the past couple of years. I know.
Definitely. Yeah.
So, and I remember there's one I really, really like, but we can't talk about it on the radio. But thank you for that one. And there's another one I like when you're passing two women on the street and they're talking to each other and they go, "Trying is hard." Because trying is hard.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened. I was, I think, on my lunch break from work, and I was just walking down the street to grab lunch or something, and I passed some. They seemed like maybe they were like Tulane students or college students, and just overheard the snippet of their conversation. This one girl said to the other, "Trying is hard." And it just summed up what I often feel, you know, and I just thought, oh, this is a great moment. So, yeah, that one ended up as a comic.
So because this is for Father's Day, talk a little bit about what this work means to you as a father.
Yeah, well, I mean, it started out of becoming a father. It kind of transitioned to be less about the kids over the years and more about myself, but they're in there now and then. And so, I don't know, I guess fatherhood is part of what I do. I'm an artist, I'm a teacher, I'm a husband, I'm a father. And I guess what I'm trying to do in the comic is sort of figure out, like, what is this all about? What is the point of all this? How do you get through this? You know, and so fatherhood is an integral part of all of that.
Do you like having this record when you look back at the early one from 8 years ago?
Definitely.
What does it feel like now?
Yeah, I love it. I guess it's just nice that those memories and those moments are captured. I mean, there are moments that otherwise would just go away. And they're not moments necessarily that I would have like pulled out a camera to take a picture of.
Right.
You know, so they're things that I probably would have mostly forgotten about. So it's a way of kind of holding on to some of these kind of smaller, little, intimate, mundane moments in life.
And when does Jenny read these comics?
Usually I kind of show her as I'm working on it, especially if she's in it. And she's like, okay. but she kind of just lets me do my thing. I usually try to kind of get her approval or at least get her to look at it before I actually put it out in the world. There have been a couple of times where I forgot to do that, but for the most part,
wait till the kids are older. They'll start demanding editorial approval.
Definitely. As they get older, I wonder, like, will they appear less and less? You know, I'm sure they won't want to be embarrassed or anything.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's something I've been very aware of, is how do I portray, I basically portray myself as like kind of the character who's always the one messing up or, you know, he's
or hiding.
Yeah. And I try to show the other characters as more like, you know, I don't want to show them in a bad light, you know, so.
So do the kids draw too?
Yes. My son especially really loves to draw. For a long time, he was drawing these robot characters and my daughter has a little desk in my studio where that's like her little painting studio, her little corner of the room. And so she'll come in there sometimes and pull out some paint and throw paint all over a piece of paper
that
or
must
something.
Be fun.
So they're, I like that they're just exposed to that. You know, I think they just think that's normal, you know, that dad and mom make things and we come in and we make things sometimes and there's paint and this and that around the house for making things. So, yeah.
Art's just a regular part of life.
Yeah.
Lucky for them and for you. So where are these comics available?
So I've got them locally at a few places. There's kind of like a punk rock record store called Sisters in Christ on Magazine Street.
Right.
Defend New Orleans has copies. And then Crescent City Comics has copies. And then outside of the city, online you can get them. I have an Etsy that you can get them on. I also am still in the process of getting the newest issue out to they're really kind of all over the country. So I basically reach out to different comic shops or places that sell zines and that kind of thing and say, hey, would you take a few copies of these? And so there's probably about, I'd say maybe about 20 different stores around the country that
that's fantastic. That have them. Now, I'm curious, when you work with your students, do you have them make books?
Yep, I do. So I teach a variety of things. I teach printmaking, Photoshop, comics, and as part of the printmaking Photoshop class, we do some bookmaking as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, these are wonderful comics, and I can't wait till you have a great big pile of them, like 30.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah. Hopefully I'll make it there. Yeah,
I think you will. I really do.
Yep, one comic at a time. Let's keep going.
That's the way we get through life, isn't it?
Yep.
Really.
Yep.
We've been talking with Kyle Bravo, whose wonderful, heartbreaking new comic is Forever and Everything 8. Most parents will see themselves in these pages somewhere. Kyle, it's such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Alex Jennings reads from and signs The Ballad of Perilous Graves, Tuesday, June 21st at 6 at Tubby & Coo's Mid-City Bookshop. Now open to the public again at 432 North Anthony Street, Suite 305C. The Waves LGBTQ reading series featuring Arden Eli Hill takes place Tuesday, June 21st at 6 at Blue Cypress Books. Founding support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Hellas Foundation and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in The Reading Life do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The theme song for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Ingmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at WWNO.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@WWNO.org.